Well, ho 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 there, and welcome to the AFA Christmas Podcast, the official podcast of animationforadults.com at Christmas. I am Father Christmas, and what's this in my sack, I see? Oh!
I'm a Rachel Ann doll. Hello!
And it's an action dab.
It's Daniel.
Daniel. That's what I said last year, yeah.
Oh, is it? Oh, yeah. You're kidding. Oh, I can't believe I nicked that joke from you. I'm passing it off. I feel dirty.
It's okay.
There must be another one.
You can
do the trend that I've seen this year of the Star Wars Christmas name.
Ooh.
Like Mary Chlory Dan. Which is mine.
That's weird.
Wow.
It will keep you occupied for hours trying to think of one.
So this is our Christmas episode. So, Merry Christmas, listeners! Woo.
Merry Christmas!
Happy Christmas and good end of the year if you want to avoid all of that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And we are going to basically talk about some stuff that we've been watching that is seasonally flavoured. This isn't going to be a normal episode. We're not going to do news or have a particular main topic. We're just gonna be a festive ramble, really. So just to give
festive,
you
like after Christmas lunch.
Yeah.
Have a little festive ramble around the block.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, just a little Christmas cracker for you. There. Not that Americans know what that is, apparently. It's one of the many things that Americans don't have at Christmas. Like, apparently advent calendars don't have them.
No.
Oh,
not
chocolate
really.
Ones, though.
There's none, I don't think. They don't have any.
Just none?
No.
Really?
No, yeah. There aren't any.
School nativities don't have them, which is really weird.
Yeah, technically, yeah.
Do you?
I don't remember really seeing them at school ever when I was here. Yeah, because I think they would, because people would get in trouble. It's like, oh, well, you have to be accepting of all religions. So that's those. Yeah, no nativity as far as I can recall. That's kept to either churches or just your own private home.
Yeah, it's a tradition here.
It's becoming less of one. It's sort of being replaced by just
Die Hard.
Die Hard for kids. What, for kids? I'm talking about nativities, like
yeah. So am I.
Oh, okay. Really?
Yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay! Merry Christmas!
Yeah.
How
amazing would that be?
I've heard more of like pantomimes being done, like Cinderella and
No, it isn't.
Things like that.
That's an average tradition they don't have. You're lucky.
Yeah.
Panto's rubbish.
Yeah.
It's interminable. So, they're like 4 hours long.
Never mind. Let's keep it in our way, and everyone else can keep it in theirs.
Yeah. Merry Christmas.
Let's all celebrate the season in our own way.
Mm-hmm.
Enjoy the holidays for what it is.
I know that you've been watching some Christmas movies, Rachel.
I have. It's been a bit trickier this year because of the job that I currently am doing is a lot more active around Christmas, so it's going to be it's been a little difficult trying to find time to squeeze in some Christmas films, but I have managed at least two of them. Yeah, don't tell them that. I'm trying to keep it a secret. It's my part-time job. I'm going to get in trouble with the boss, for God's sake.
Yeah, she should be working around the clock.
I'll cut that bit out.
Okay.
Secret safe with me.
Okay, thank you. But no, yeah, I have managed to see at least two Christmas films. One of which I think I was been looking forward to discussing at length with you guys because I know last year on our Christmas special, you guys talked up and down about this movie that I had not had a chance to see yet, and I have only just now was able to get it on Netflix and see it for the full length for the first time, and that is Tokyo Godfathers, which is not explicitly Christmas, but it is set around Christmas, and the fact that it's around, like, there's heavy, like, ideas about, like, you know, Christmas miracles and all that in this movie, and it was very entertaining. I'm very glad I finally got a chance to see it, and thank you both so much for recommending it as highly as you did, that I was finally able to get, you know, break down and rent it on Netflix and get to see it for the first
time.
That's
awesome. I'm glad you liked it.
Oh, God. It was a wonderful movie. I love all the characters were phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they absolutely make it.
Mm-hmm. It was funny, though, because I was watching it, and I'd rented it for myself, but then my mom came over, and she's like, oh, I'm curious to see what this is about, and it's funny, because I didn't think it would be the kind of movie she'd get into. Like, it was, like, it's one of those just, like, strange anime films, especially since it was, normally she gets a lot into, you know, anime films that have been dubbed, and obviously, Tokyo Godfathers has not been dubbed, and it was all subbed. But she was actually able to keep along with it, you know, well. She enjoyed it. And she had just about as much fun as I did, I think. It was a real, real treat to be able to share something like that with her. So it was, you know, even more of a fun Christmas bonding moment.
It's a really entertaining movie. I think it's Satoshi Kon's maybe most, if not entertaining, but like accessible.
Oh, definitely most accessible, yeah. It's compared to, like, Perfect Blue and Paprika, it is pretty straightforward, really.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so these three homeless people, they're, you know, all from different backgrounds. They're doing their thing on Christmas, and they find this poor little baby girl in the trash, and they just, you know, they decide to take care of her and try to, you know, find, I think more so on the character of Hana's part, tries to actually look for her family on their own instead of, you know, just giving her to the police. And then just, you know, watching their escapades as they try to deduce, you know, where this baby comes from and, you know, who her parents are. Yeah, and it was a very satisfying story. It always kept me guessing.
It's just such a human. I get, like, emotional watching it because of the humanity that the movie has for its characters.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the fact that, I mean, at the start, either they're lying about who they are, what they've been through, or they're hiding it. And they're at each other's throats, and it's really, like, it's cartoony, and it can kind of get away with how literally at their throats the characters are.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, when it comes to the reveals of, you know, what happened with, I forget the characters' names, the young girl.
Miyuki. The young runaway.
Yeah, what happened with her, and, you know, the fact that she came from quite a nice family, you know, whilst not in a nice situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the humanity in how Hana is depicted as well.
Oh, God. I think my favorite character in the whole movie is Hana.
Yeah, absolutely. Just how, you know, how beautifully, like, imperfect and cartoony she is just brilliant.
Mm-hmm. And even how, like, you know, the trio of them just really balance each other out. You have, I pronounce it like Jin or Gin. I think it's Gin because I think it's G.
Yeah, I think it's
Gin. Gin, Hana, and Miyuki, how they all balance each other out. Because, I mean, it was really interesting when they first find the baby. You know, Hana is obviously the one that's, you know, the one that's most eager to take care of the baby, who they named Kyoko. Miyuki really is like, you know, typical like teenage girl. She doesn't really want anything to do with it for the most part, but she's, you know, when she's asked to take care of the baby, she does the best she can. But the one who really knows the most about taking care of a baby is Gin, which I never would have expected when he first introduced to his character. Mm-hmm. But then it's like he actually the most working knowledge of, you know, taking care of a baby than the others do. And, you know, he even though he's not, he's more interested in the immediate solution of let's just take this child to the police and just get on with our day. Whereas Han's like, oh no, let's go on. This is a miraculous baby. We need to find her, you know, find her parents ourselves. Whereas, yeah. Gin, you know, but Gin's more of like, you know, he's an alcoholic. He's a drunk, but he's still. But it's surprising to find him as the more like practical one of the three.
Yeah, in some ways he is more practical, but I like all of them. He's really, you know, hanging on to something that he feels he was owed,
mm-hmm.
or never got or lost, and that's why like the movie. I can keep. I have seen it so many times now. Is because that never gets old. Seeing underneath all the harsh exteriors. Because, I mean, the movie does. It's about It's about homelessness.
Mm-hmm.
And the movie doesn't shy away from how brutal that often is.
No, it does not. That's, I appreciate
and
that
how
a
unforgiving
lot.
It is. So the characters are naturally sort of toughened by their environment, and yeah, in the moments where they do, you do get to see them. You see what I mean now, Rachel, by like why I love the animation in this movie so much, because mm-hmm. when it wants you to see the person underneath the rough exterior that these characters present to the world. Mm-hmm. They're drawn so delicately.
They are.
And their faces literally look different. But it is... It's beautiful because that's exactly how it feels when you look at someone and you really see them.
Mm-hmm.
For the first time. You're looking through their features and their everyday sort of, you know, presented self into mm-hmm. who they really are. And yeah, Yeah, we could go on about this one forever, right?
you really could, but I would like to. I mean, there are so many different aspects about the film. Like, I mean, the characters for me really hung it together, even regardless of what kind of like scenarios they found themselves in. Like, there's the whole part where they got invited to this like mob or like yakuza wedding ceremony, and they get caught up in an assassination attempt, and Miyuki and the baby are taken by one of the gunmen as like a temporary hostage. And then she ends up in that, the home. I think this, I couldn't tell from the language that the lady was speaking, but this is a mother who was taking care yes. of her child. And speaking of like, it was just that scene alone was really impressive. Just the fact that they were, you know, there was a very present language barrier between them, but they still got along fine. Until Hana finally tracked Miyuki down and was able to pick her up. But it was really good, like, not just vocal performances, but acting as well, just in terms of, like, the body language as they were trying to find a way to communicate between those two characters, Miyuki and the mother. And, oh gosh, there was so many other things, like, but really, if I think when it really comes down to it, it's just those three, the trio of characters that really holds the movie together. Like, all their ups and downs, and their, you know, like I said, the stuff that they, about their background that they either make up or try to keep hidden from the others. And just, I mean, regardless of, like, the movie goes into some pretty dark places, too. I mean, the whole, like, kind of, like, twist with the whole, with the baby, and how that ended up in the she ended up in the garbage was, I didn't see coming.
Well, a baby in the garbage isn't a good story anyway.
No,
so.
I mean, still, I mean,
yeah.
Well, I meant in terms of like the fact that, you know, you think that at a certain point, like, oh, she's found her mother, she's fine. It's like, oh wait, no, There are some other serious things going on right now, and it's tied to what we've been learning bit by bit throughout the whole movie. But
yeah, it's a real, like, it's one of those movies which manages to be entertaining but have, you know, some substance or daring about what it's dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of feels appropriate, I think, for Christmas.
Yeah.
For Christmas movies. It's, you know, like, It's a Wonderful Life kind of does that. It kind of examines, and, you know, Christmas Carol examines, like, the worst and most selfish and thoughtless acts that people can commit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Before the film I saw yesterday, they played a trailer for It's a Wonderful Life re-release.
Oh, yeah?
Anyway, the whole story, including the end. I mean, spoilers.
What?
I mean, come on. Not going to watch it now. Rubbish.
That is not a movie you spoil.
I always forget, like, how long that movie is. Like, it takes a long time to get to the point at which you think it's going to get to about 20 minutes in.
But yeah, one of the, I don't know why, there's always one joke. I mean, there are plenty of jokes in Tokyo Godfathers that I just thought were, they, at the, you know, when I, while watching it, were just like, I was laughing out loud quite a few bits. But there was this one joke that they kind of make in the beginning of the film, when you have Gin and Hana, they're both getting, you know, like, some kind of soup kitchen, you know, getting food before meeting up with Miyuki later on. And Han is joking about, you know, wanting to be a mother, you know, talking about wanting to be a mother, and joking that she's eating for two to this one, the lady goes, you know, the soup kitchen. And then later on in the film, when they found the baby Kyoko and are, you know, starting on their little quest to find her family, and they run in, you know, you see that same lady from the soup kitchen. It's like this big, like, wide-eyed.
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh my God, she was eating for two.
Yeah, yeah. She's going up, like, the escalator. And yeah. She's just like, yeah.
That joke went by so quickly. But and my mom, I had to actually, like, remind her of that later on after we finished the movie. But, like, that was a great joke. That was just, like, it's, I don't know if it's just, like, it's more of, like a Japanese, like, you know, comedic timing thing that made it, like, you know, it might fly by a bit fast for some people, but it just, it was so good. It was beautiful.
Yeah, I think, in actual fact, I think Khan is, and he said himself, he was really influenced by American films,
mm-hmm.
And European films, and I think, I mean, this, lots of Japanese films are accessible and easily watchable and enjoyable. But he does have a particular sense of just a very universal and appealing sense of entertainment in his scenes, and just how he will mine humor where it's supposed to be. And yeah, we could go on and on about about this movie, but
it's so excellent.
Yeah, I'm glad that we're talking about it again.
Yes, I'm not sure if I would say it's a 100% Christmas classic, but it's still definitely worth watching around this time of year. Like, if you're curious and really want to check it out, if you haven't seen it before, like I was, it's definitely worth seeing. It's in the spirit of the holiday, for what it, you know, what it is. Like, we were explaining, it's like both the light and the dark of, you know, that of humanity that tends to be examined around this time of year. It's definitely one of those kind of movies.
It's as much a Christmas movie as, like, Home Alone is.
Mm.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, it's set, the events of the movie are set during Christmas, and it's, even though it's not explicitly, it's in the spirit of the holiday.
Mm-hmm.
It touches on something very important about what the holiday is supposed to represent. So it's definitely worth seeing just for that alone.
And also,
Sorry, Chris.
So it's set in Tokyo, so obviously Japan, Christmas isn't quite the same.
No,
culturally.
It isn't.
No, yeah, yeah. Every, yeah.
They still know what it is, and they They make a...
lots of people celebrate it there.
Yeah,
it's not.
Yeah. But
it's not a holiday.
No.
Yeah.
And what were you going to say, Dan?
Well, it was just I have like a Christmas bone to pick. Why suddenly? And I think this might only really be Chris who will know what I'm talking about. Why suddenly has it been decided that Home Alone music means Christmas? Every single advert this year has the Home Alone theme running through it.
Does it?
And I hear it in shops as well.
Well, here's the thing, because the song itself from Home Alone actually does talk a lot about Christmas. So it was designed that way because it is this boy's home alone during Christmas, and it's about the fact that all he wants is to have his family back when we originally didn't want them. So it's that itself is tied very much to the holiday. So that I can understand, and it's a nice sounding song that kind of has a bit of the holiday. I would say more like sounds like Christmas, really.
Yeah, no, it certainly does like sound Christmassy, and like especially when the end of that movie plays, it's like it's really Christmassy. Mm-hmm. Nothing more Christmassy than two bandits being hauled into police cars. But but it's just this year. It's like suddenly the rights have like run out or something, and everyone's playing it.
Yeah, I can't
like,
really.
Never mind.
Understand why, but still, I know I enjoy hearing that.
Christmas bone picked.
Yeah. I only had time to see one other Christmas movie this year, at least animated wise so far, and that is Aardman's joint movie with Sony, which is Arthur Christmas. And I remember I was originally very hesitant about checking this movie out because I think it came out around the time when I was like, it was my last year of college. And I was intrigued, but I wasn't really like, I think the trailers didn't really do it justice, to be honest. Because I think that seems to be a running case with a lot of like certain animated films, with under big studio banners that are, if they aren't advertised right, then sometimes I'll want either I want to see them or I'll kind of just like miss the boat for a while because the advertising just put me off the movie for so long. But then I started hearing, seeing reviews for it like a couple years later and saying, oh, this is actually a really, considered a really good Christmas movie, a good movie about the myth behind Santa Claus. And like, oh, okay, well, I'll give it a shot. And then I just kind of, after seeing it, I'm just kind of kicking myself. Like, why didn't I give this movie more of a chance when it came out? Because it is very well done in terms of the whole, dynamic between the different members of the Claus family and the whole premise of trying to get this missed Christmas present back to this little girl who was inexplicably missed in the whole Christmas rush, which was also expertly handled. I loved how they modernized the whole thing.
Yeah.
It was absolutely hilarious. They have like Christmas, like command center and everything with this giant, like spaceship sized sleigh, which acts as their, where it goes from different, country to country, like delivering presents. It was just, oh gosh, it is a treat. And if you haven't had an opportunity to see it yet, like if you were hesitant to go into it like I was, definitely just bite the bullet and watch it. You'll love it. You did.
And Bill Nye is awesome as Grand Santa.
Oh God, yes, funny.
I mean, it's got a great cast all around. I mean, you've got James McAvoy as Arthur Christmas. You've got Jim Broadbent as the current Santa, Malcolm Claus, and you've got Hugh Laurie as the older brother,
Steve Claus.
Yeah, and then you've got Bill Nighy as the cranky old grandpa Santa, and yeah,
who can't remember the names of the reindeer? It's like Bambi. Oh gosh, that was just, it's such a good movie. Yes, it was great casting, and they just, that's probably was like the icing on the cake for the whole movie, because the characters were great, loved their interactions with each other. The different set pieces were really interesting, like the love of the, you know, having that big techno sleigh, but then having, you know, the traditional sleigh still being there with the reindeer, and that's most of the movie is them trying to, you know, drive it to the place where they need to get to and constantly failing at it because it's been so long. And like the only thing that kind of, I think, with the criticism I have is that it kind of meanders in places, but that's it's still like, it's with the way it ends, it's still definitely like, you know, it's worth going through the journey to just see the family come together and kind of embracing like the old, the modern, and the, you know, traditional Christmas elements. Like it like kind of like recognizing the you know, like the three different aspects of the, you know, Christmas Carol, the Christmas past, present, and future, all in one movie. But yeah, it's just good. I really liked it, and now it's kind of become a classic movie in my family. Ever since we gave it a shot.
I still need to check it out.
I don't know.
I'm really, really late on it.
I don't know if it still is, but it was on Netflix at some point.
It is. That's how we rented it.
Yeah.
If it's still on there, I'm not sure.
Mm. So, and also, it's always really cheap. It's like I think I picked up the DVD for about £3 or something, and even the Blu-rays hardly any money last time I checked, because it's like, it's not really as popular as perhaps deserves to be. So
yeah, that's what I find kind of really sad. I'm wondering if it was part of the fact that it wasn't really advertised all that well when it was coming out. And I'm thinking if it had been better promoted, it maybe we would have found more of an audience. But hopefully, you know, the best thing we can do for it is say, hey, go see it, please. If you really like good animation and good, you know, storytelling, you know, focused around the Christmas holiday and, you know, the Santa Claus myth, that this is definitely a really, really unique take on it.
I think in the UK, probably people had a bit of reaction to, it's Aardman, but it's not stop motion.
That was interesting to find out that Aardman was responsible for this movie. And I think the director was actually, if this was a first time feature directing film also. I'm trying to remember.
And unlike Flush Away, it doesn't try to look like traditional like Aardman stop motion.
But it does still sort of have Aardman. It has the Aardman tone still.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah,
oh, really?
Totally.
Yeah. So it's still.
I'm so behind on this one. The funny thing about Christmas movies is they take like longer to catch up with.
Mm. Because you have to wait till Christmas.
You have to wait till Christmas, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard someone say how you can tell if something's a Christmas movie or not is if you feel weird about watching it any other time of year.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
They say
that's
so
good.
So Die Hard isn't really a Christmas movie.
No.
Set at Christmas. And you're like, all,
you could still watch it at Christmas and it still would make sense, but it's not technically.
You can watch it any time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Same as with basically all of Shane Black's movies. Because Iron Man 3 is technically a Christmas movie, but you could watch it any time.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Just partly set at Christmas. Yeah.
So that's pretty much does it for me, though, but it's just, Arthur Christmas. It was a pleasant surprise for me.
Mm-hmm. I concur. Go watch it, people, if you haven't seen it.
Yes.
I've watched some Christmassy things. I actually watched a anime short called Santa Company. I ended up getting a download of because I, on Kickstarter, I backed another animation by the same creator, and I must have picked a thing where I got like a double pack download. And it is basically Santa Company is a company that runs Christmas in North Pole, and they have like hundreds of Santas. And Santa's
so this is another take on the myth where it's Santa Claus is not one person, but like a whole slew of different people.
Yeah, and there's people who work as kind of elves, but they just look like normal people, and they're just like cute anime kids, basically. And the main character is called Noelle, and she's also got friends. There's a friend called Belle, I think, and a friend called Mint. And she's like actually the son of someone who works high, I mean, the daughter of someone who works up high at the Santa Company, but she's not particularly high flying, and she's in danger of being kicked out because she's a trainee elf type thing. Mm-hmm. And she's gonna get kicked out if she doesn't graduate by Christmas. But then she finds out that a letter comes from a child after all the Santas have gone, and she's like, no, you've got to take the present to the Santa, to the little girl. And the people are like, no, they've gone, it's too late. So she's not having this because that's not Christmas. So she goes and she finds there is a leftover sleigh with this reindeer called Rudolph the Third that's got a scar and doesn't like people very much. He's a grumpy reindeer. And basically her and her friends set off to try and take this present to this little girl. And mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just like a little 25-minute short, and it's cute, and it was a bit random at one point where someone goes, "Oh, did you bring the weapons?" And it's like,
"Wait, what?
You're in today? where's this what? Come from?" Like, no.
Who do they need to defend themselves against? What?
But it's like it's not against any monsters or anything. It's like they're like. It's like a natural phenomenon type thing that they have to get out of the way, that they have to shoot. But it was totally surprising when that happened. I was like, what? Where's this going?
We got to fulfill the anime cliche: small cute children with weapons of mass destruction, of thing.
So it's cute. Until the gods, but that doesn't really. Yeah, that's just.
That's a little odd. It's like another again with Die Hard, like Die Hard and Christmas. It's like those two things unexpectedly can go together quite well.
Yes, so I decided to watch that, seeing that it was nearly Christmas, and I enjoyed it.
Is it available to see? Like in Crunchyroll, or like is it like where would you say would be the best? Was it just like a private thing with Kickstarter?
I got to see it because I backed the successor series, because I know this was also crowdfunded, but I don't really know if you can see it. I know there was some copies on YouTube, but I don't know that they've been put up there officially, so I don't want to. But you know, if you backed it and you haven't watched it yet, watch it. It's fun. And I also watched a old British Christmas TV special called Father Christmas by Raymond Briggs, the author, of course, of The Snowman, which we talked about in depth last year at Christmas, and is a bit of a classic. Oh, this is a slightly more recent TV special. It's from 1991, I think. And this is actually this is available to watch on YouTube in its entirety, completely legitimately. It's been put up by the British distribution company, and it is. Basically, it's about what Father Christmas, or Santa Claus, you'd say in America, what he does on his days off, the days he's not being Santa Claus. And he goes on holiday, because he's just like lives in a terrace house in the UK. He's just like a slightly grumpy British man.
It's blooming. Great. That's my favorite thing about it. That's like the whole thing about it is,
mm-hmm.
what if he was just a guy who lived in a little house and, you know, had a quiet little life?
Mm-hmm. Outside of his Christmas business.
And I remember thinking, as a child, that it was actually really naughty because Father Christmas said swears. So in my memory, like, he probably goes around going, oh, bloody this, arse, etc. But actually watching it, he says blooming. That's as far as it goes. He says blooming a lot. He goes, oh, another blooming Christmas. And there's even a song called Another Blooming Christmas. But as a impressionable youngster, I thought that was really rude. And this was really naughty. But
I remember it being naughty as well, because he was kind of rude and he said blooming, and his manner is quite
he's gruff.
Gruff, yeah, and not grumpy and gruff, but just a bit just
rough, like diamond,
old,
is
like a real old man, rough diamond,
And he was voiced by a great British comedian called Mel Smith, who's sadly no longer with us.
I didn't know it was him.
It is indeed. And he goes off on holiday. Like he's got like a caravan pulled by reindeer, and he goes off. He tries going to France. he eats some fish, I think it is. And this Father Christmas is so English that he goes to like a fancy French restaurant and complains because they haven't got any chips. He got chips and he got any ketchup. No, nah. Silly Englishman. And he eats too much, and then he gets a dicky tummy, and then he goes off to Las Vegas and he does some gambling and gets drunk and dances with some ladies.
Wow. It's very interesting. This is movie.
Well, this is like, that's Father Christmas is drunk, because I always find it funny in American movies when you hear about
him
being left milk and cookies. We left him
alcohol.
We left him a glass of whiskey and mince pie.
Because English parents knows what's up. I mean,
the real Father Christmas. If you're going around the world in a night, I want a whiskey.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? That's not a bad idea, to be honest with you, because I had no idea that that was even a thing. So
let's say when I was a kid, we would do it, and then we would come home. We'd come downstairs in the morning, and the mince pie would be eaten, and all of the whiskey would be gone. And it wasn't until I got older that I realised how that had happened. Obviously. Father Christmas drunk it, yeah.
So this is a really, really lovely Christmas special. And,
it sounds really fun.
But it sounds like not that Christmassy, but at the end it does get to the bit where it's Christmas and he goes off and does his Christmassy bits, and then he flies off and he meets the snowman and the little boy who grows up to be David Bowie, and it's a crossover with the snowman.
I had no idea.
Raymond Briggs cinematic universe.
Don't.
Yeah. So I also read that apparently that Ernest is in the background, because Ernest was predated, that was drawn ages ago, and characters from When the Wind Blows. So,
Oh my god.
It all happens in the same cinematic universe, which means it all ends horribly. So don't think about that.
Oh gosh. Yeah.
yes. But I would say, definitely watch it. It's lovely. Raymond Brick stuff is always good, and it's the animation style is gorgeous. Same style as a Snowman, and worth checking out if you've never seen it.
It's a real cozy.
It's on YouTube, you said?
Yeah. Yes.
All right.
I will send you a link, and I'll put it in the show notes. I hope it's not one of these. You can't watch this because you're in America. Yes, and basically, like all these Christmas specials, like Snowman and everything. Yeah, the thing I said about David Bowie. Somebody said recently, I heard someone say about. I didn't realise till recently that the Snowman is actually David Bowie's origin story.
And it's like, what?
Oh, yeah, because he grows up to. Because in the introduction where he introduces it in the version that was shown in America, where he says, "Oh yeah, and I met the Snowman." Oh, so that's the little boy in the Snowman. So he grows up to be David Bowie. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. There's a little bit about the movie you never knew before.
Yes. So, and there's going to be this Christmas in the UK. You'll be able to see Ethel and Ernest, the new Raymond Briggs animated film.
It is a film. It's a feature.
Yes, it's a feature, and it's been shown in cinemas and everything. And now it's going to be on TV over Christmas on the 28th of December, I think.
Very cool. Yeah.
And BBC One, 7:30.
And on, is it Boxing Day or Christmas Eve? The studio that made Snowman and the Snow Dog, and Ethel and Ernest, actually, a short. Yeah.
We're going on a bear hunt.
I don't know about you, Chris, but I could not for my first, I would say, like 6 years... avoid that book. If I tried, we used to read it all the time at school, so I'm kind of looking forward to that one.
I don't actually remember it. I don't remember having read it as a child, but I know that my niece did. So
it's one of those books which is like that can be performed.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, that's on Channel 4 over Christmas, who are the people who gave us the Snowman and Snowman and the Snow Dog and Father Christmas.
Yeah, they did actually play the Snowman this weekend.
Very cool.
I watched that. Oh yeah, because I did see people reacting online to the fact it's on.
People always react.
Yes, because it's a classic. Listen to our Christmas episode last year and also read my review of it. So you can see. And also there's going to be on the BBC, there's going to be the adaptation of Revolting Rhymes, the Roald Dahl story.
Ah, yes. I remember that.
It's two parts, I think. Yeah. I think that's from the people who did the Gruffalo short and Stickman.
Room on the Broom.
Yes, those people. Mm-hmm. And apparently there's been some controversy because some people are saying that in this version Snow White and Red Riding Hood have a very close relationship, apparently. And they asked the someone, the director or something, and he said, I couldn't possibly comment. That kind of answer.
All right.
Okay.
You might want to read it like that. So,
I mean, I doubt it's going to be offensive if it's on over Christmas in a family slot.
Only to Daily Mail readers who can't cope with anything.
No, at Christmas time, readers of all publications are welcome or equally open to ridicule. I don't know.
Yeah, so I watched Father Christmas. And
very cool. I will have to look into that if I can. Because it sounds like a really interesting movie.
It's like 25 minutes. Oh, and apparently when it was shown in America, it was redubbed and it was cut quite a bit.
Oh, joy.
Instead of saying Bloomin', he said Merry.
What?
So it's not Bloomin' Christmas, it's Merry Christmas. I guess they probably took out the toilet humour where he's running off to the toilet. They would have cut out the bit where he gets drunk and hungover and probably dancing with the dancing girls. And probably about 15 minutes. I don't know.
Yeah, that's true.
And also, I don't think you see his bum. So, hey.
Come on, people.
You got to see Santa's bum at Christmas.
It's not festive.
It's not. That's not the point. It's just
people. Sorry, not Santa. So Father Christmas.
Sensitive.
Yeah.
I heard actually that Father Christmas and Santa Claus actually have quite different histories, like mythologically. And
I'm
it's
not
only,
sure. It's supposedly
only in the start of the 20th century or late 19th that they actually were kind of melded into two.
Okay, one. That makes sense. That's interesting. It'd be to know the different how both of those those characters originally started separate and then they kind of became one person.
Mm.
That's interesting.
Can one person, like, who else? Okay. What else?
I just said that's all I had time
to
watch.
What else makes Christmas? What else makes Christmas viewing?
Well, I know one way or another, despite the fact that I'm working on both Christmas Eve and Day, my family is definitely going to make time to see Charlie Brown Christmas. And I know I probably mentioned that in last year's episode as well.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
That is such a staple in my family. Like, even though and you'll see in my review of the film that we have on the website that I go into a bit of the movie's history, and that it was really made on a shoestring budget. Like, there was literally, because it was the whole purpose of making this special was so that the folks behind it could make a proper Peanuts-inspired documentary. And, you know, in order to do that, they needed to make this short first in order to satisfy, you know, to get the funding to do so. And they did. So they just basically, you know, tried to put effort into it, but they really didn't have the money to spend on it. So they just, you know, did what they could with what they were given and tried to get that out on time. But they were all so worried because of the fact that they had to rush it, the fact that, you know, it would not be good or wouldn't be, you know, accepted. Well, years later, it's like, you know, it was like, or we can see how wrong they were, how, like, you know, it was basically how it took the world by storm. Like, it was insanely popular and how it's kind of stood the test of time for just, like, even the fact that they, you know, basically just tried to do the best that they could with what they were given, that they were still able to make something that was widely successful. And, you know, obviously today we, like, I'll go into, like, a drugstore where they, you know, like, where the parts where they sell, you know, like, you know, food and such, and, like, you know, part where they're toys, like, you'll see, like, merchandise specifically made inspired by the short are all for sale, and they sell pretty, and they sell fast. So it's like this is a lasting thing, and for good reason, because there is something about it that, while it's simple, it still holds very true to the spirit of the holiday, and it's definitely something that my family will go back to every single year.
I tell you what, actually, this week I finally watched the what is called in the UK Charlie Brown and Snoopy, a Peanuts movie, or as it's called everywhere else, a Peanuts movie.
Oh!
I finally saw that, and there's a little bit of Christmas in it, briefly. And the animation on that, I love the animation. It just makes me want to see Blue Sky do things that aren't Ice Age.
I know,
oh god, yeah! If they did another Peanuts-inspired, like, shorter movie, that would be phenomenal.
Yeah, you're right, Chris. It's really weirdly refreshing. Just seeing things from, like, a different eye.
Yeah, and it's just... Mm. It's, the animation is... I love the animation style, and it perfectly captures the spirit of Peanuts. And even though they were like, you do kind of go, well, there are kind of a few too many sort of pop music interludes that feel a bit out of place, but it still feels pretty timeless. And and I watched it with my nieces, and they enjoyed it. So, so it does work for today's generation. There you go.
It does.
And actually, my nephew wandered into the room, and he did giggle a few places. So there you go. And he's only 2.5. So there you go. So I do associate Charlie Brown and Snoopy with Christmas, even when it's not a Christmas special. I think it's so closely associated with that in my head, watching various different Peanuts animation set at Christmas,
or even general holidays, because there was like almost like a special for Peanuts almost every single holiday. I think there was a Valentine's one, there was a Thanksgiving one, there was a New Year's one.
New Year's definitely.
But yeah, they just had so many different specials for like different holidays. But yeah, the one that I think that most people associate with, you know, Charlie Brown and Peanuts is definitely Christmas. For the more so than the other ones, I think.
It's like Calvin and Hobbes did Christmas so well that I always kind of associate that with Christmas as well. Because he just perfectly captured Christmas being a kid. But also, it's not animated, I know, but Christmas is not Christmas without the Muppet Christmas Carol.
Oh, I totally agree.
Someone almost managed to ruin that for me the other day.
Are you serious? Who would dare?
Well, no. Like, so basically, from as like young as I can remember, was always mesmerized by the effect of the Ghosts of Christmas Past.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, it's the most beautiful, like, looking effect. And I think it really still holds up. And then someone said, like, on Twitter, I saw someone say, that feeling when, like, your poached egg comes back to haunt you.
Hmm?
And I guess it kind of does look a little bit like a poached egg.
I don't.
When you're cooking one. I don't know. But I almost. I mean, yeah.
I thought it was going to be something worse, far worse than that.
No. No, it was like, man, every time I watch that movie, like, something about, like, maybe the fact that you have to sit through the credits at the start and you see all the names. I just think about can you imagine if there was like a behind the scenes documentary or something, just to see like the amount of, because you can feel it, like the amount of love and enthusiasm that went into making it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
like it's really just like a, everything else aside, it's a real testament to, like, you know, just a team of people believing in something and, like, that sort of, like, having its own power now. Mm-hmm. It's just really become its own thing. It's amazing.
And it's all the Muppets movies have a really good grasp of comedy. And I think that's probably, like, watching that version of the Christmas, that's probably one of the funniest versions of the Christmas Carol that I've ever seen, is with the Muppets. Because there are so many jokes that are just kind of spot on. Even just the fact that you've got Gonzo and Rizzo as the kind of faux narrators of the whole story.
Yeah.
It was just genius.
I didn't realize, like, until I read it, that the, as Gonzo kind of recommends you to at the end of the movie, that the book itself is kind of quite funny in its sort of narrator's tone. It will sort of like almost like a Stuart Lee bit just go on and on, like explaining what it means, like that, what, in on the first page it's like oh, Marley was dead as a doornail. Mind you, I don't know what's particularly dead about a doornail. And then it just, like, goes on and on.
Yeah, you know what? I'm remembering this now.
It's so crazy. It's a really weirdly sarcastic book.
It's kind of self-aware in that way, I think.
Oh yeah, it's really self-aware. Yeah, but that's why, like, I think it really works, because it is weirdly humorous, like, the story.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the Muppets version is so good. Every single, the only thing that kind of lasts through the year for me with that movie is I really want to, like, every time someone says no doubt, I just hear Miss Piggy saying no doubt, like, you know, the way she does in the movie.
Yeah.
Oh, God, it's so good.
I always remember Sam the Eagle saying, it is the...
American way.
It is the American way. And someone whispers to him, it is the British way.
Yes. Yes. I love that joke.
God. Yeah. It's a real classic. It really stands up.
Now, I will say this. I mean, I didn't stick around to watch the whole movie because I kind of lost a little bit of it. I'll explain why. I'm not referring to the Muppets Christmas Carol, but there was another version of the Christmas Carol that I happened upon television, like, not too terribly long ago. But I didn't want to. I wouldn't say I watched it, because the fact that I didn't stick around for the whole thing. I just kind of watched, like, a couple scenes, and then I just got really kind of bored with it and just kind of checked out.
Was it an animated one?
It was the Jim Carrey one.
The Robert Zemeckis one.
Yeah.
The one where he goes on a 3D flying adventure on a, what is it? It's like a candle snuff.
I think so. I didn't get that far.
What the hell is that thing? Oh, right. Okay, that's quite early on.
But no, because the part that I came in on, like, I was on TV, like, literally as I was walking in from work on one evening, and it was the part where it's Christmas Eve, and Scrooge is going home after work to go home and, you know, just turn in for the night. And it basically, I only watched from when he's going up to his doorknob, you know, all the way, you know, to when Jacob Marley shows up and, you know, as a ghost. And I made it, like, a little more than halfway through that scene, and then I just basically, like, okay, this is, I'm not on board with this at all. I am changing the channel. Because while the animation is interesting in that movie, it's just the way it kind of handles certain scenes. It just is, like, it's real very long and drawn out, and just, like, I mean, I can tell what it was trying to do. It was trying to build tension for when they revealed Marley's ghosts and try to make him seem as creepy as possible, which is, you know, I can understand why they would do that. But it took so long to get to where it was trying to go to when, say, like, versions with, like, the Muppet Christmas Carol, where they've already, you know, the Marley brothers have already had their song number and are, you know, disappearing. Or say even like the Disney and Mickey's Christmas Carol, where, you know, we've already had, you know, Goofy make his appearance as Jacob Marley and falling down the stairs. It's like those movies, like, kind of just went straight on through. Like, they got to the point of the scene and then they just moved on in their own respective ways. Whereas this one was just taking its so freaking long. And I don't understand why, because we all know the point that it's going to get to. It's just, it was trying really hard in order to make, like, either get you to be scared. And it's like, I'm sorry, I've seen so many different versions of this movie that I know what's going to happen. You know, I know Scrooge is not, nothing bad's going to happen to Scrooge, because that's kind of the point of the movie, is for him to, you know, get the warning and then move on to the different, you know, trials by the ghosts. So it's just like, you're trying to make me feel things that I'm not feeling, and it's just making it feel kind of awkward.
And then he has to go off an adventure with his great nephews. And
yeah, I know. That was the one thing I think was that was the introduction of Scrooge McDuck before he had his whole mini, you know, with DuckTales and so forth. And it's just like, you know, I remember both of those films, like both the Muppets Christmas Carol and then the Mickey's Christmas Carol, very fondly for different reasons. And it's kind of their own take on the traditional Christmas Carol story, and really enjoying them the heck out of those stories. But I don't know, there was just something about this recent one that just like I could see what it was trying to do, but it was still coming up very, very short for me, which is a shame, because it's just like I want it to be good. I wanted the Christmas Carol to tell its story, but just was not willing to stick around.
Again, it's not animated, but one of the funniest takes on Christmas Carol is Blackadder's Christmas Carol.
I have heard of this. I have not seen it personally, but I am familiar with Blackadder, and I appreciate that they try to do a spin, that for Christmas they try to do a spin on it.
Well, it's the reverse on the typical Christmas Carol, because he is a nice Blackadder. He's the world's nicest man, and basically the ghost shows him all his like his ancestors and what do you call it? Not successors.
Like past predecessors. Lives.
Yeah, predecessors. Predecessors. And he sees that they were all bastards, and basically he gets turned around and he stops being nice.
And then he's the Blackadder that we all know and laugh at.
Yes. Yes.
I did appreciate the idea of that. I unfortunately never really saw it. I never had the opportunity to actually see it myself, but I am familiar with its reputation.
And Hagrid himself is one of the ghosts. So there you go.
Nice!
Yes, so... any other sort of animated Christmas episodes that stand out to you that you can think of?
Oh, gosh. I just recently watched, I think it was on YouTube relatively recently, the French version of the Miraculous Ladybug Christmas episode.
Oui.
It was rather cute. Just Miraculous Ladybug and Cat Noir is in general a very entertaining show. Jill and I have gone on and on about that. And I know they've been kind of taking a break recently before they get ready for the next season, but they, in order to like kind of like bridge the gap, they had this little Christmas special. And it is a musical episode, which is something that the series has not done before. And it was interesting because, I mean, I've never seen anything that's like in French that was, you know, also a musical. You know, seeing it in the French language. So it was interesting to hear. But it was a good story with the characters. We got to learn a bit more about Adrian and the fact that he has only just recently lost his mother. This is actually the very first time that he and his father are actually spending the holiday without her, which is new information. And that kind of gives a whole new weight to the character or characters, because both him and his father seem to be primary characters in the story. And it was a good idea. I mean, the one thing that was that kind of took me out a little bit of it, but it was still, you know, very much in the line of the show, is the fact that the villain of the episode was a guy, you know, was a Santa, you know, Santa Claus, you know, a guy dressed up as Santa Claus. You know, he's just doing his thing, you know, making kids smile and having a good time on the holiday. And then just when he takes Adrian back to his house, who kind of ran away for a little bit because, you know, things weren't going so well at home, so he ran off for a little while, and then he runs into the Santa Claus, and then the Santa Claus offers to take him home after giving him some advice to help him feel better. And then he comes home, his dad, you know, takes Adrian back inside, and he's like, you know, basically turns the Santa Claus guy on his, you know, ass, because it's like, you know, Adrian's dad's a jerk.
No.
He's a very big jerk, and then obviously the Santa Claus is upset, and then that's when Hawk Moth, the primary villain, is like, oh, someone's unhappy. I'm going to possess them with my black butterflies and make them run rampant throughout Paris. And then that's when both Ladybug and Cat Noir have to get on their game and go and help them get back to normal. It was good. It was fun. Especially because you get to see like an evil Santa Claus running around, which was quite interesting.
Last year they did a Danger Mouse Christmas special featuring Brian Blessed as Santa, so that was perfect.
Of course. he's perfect for Santa. He'd be perfect for Raymond Briggs' Santa.
He would, yeah, if they did a remake.
Yeah.
Or a sequel. Yeah.
But Evil Santa is fun. Mm. Apart from Evil Santa in Futurama.
Oh, yeah.
What's he called? Robots? Is he just Robot Santa. Is he just called Robot Santa?
That's his only name. It's his only title.
And he's originally played by John Goodman, who, again, awesome casting for Father Christmas. Mm. And then later, John DiMaggio took over.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I'd forgotten that there was that cast change.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've been reading about it today, writing an article, so there you go. my list of animated Santas that you can see on the website right now.
Very cool. But yeah, I think that's all I've had time to really watch this year, because like I said, I'm not used to working a job where it's demanding a lot more of me at this time of year, but it's gonna feel good once it's done. And I have had some time to watch, you know, stuff like Tokyo Godfathers and Arthur Christmas and a couple other things here and there. So it was, I'm still very much in the Christmas spirit still, I think, thanks to those movies.
Ho, ho, ho.
Ho, ho, ho.
So thank you everybody for joining us for our little Christmas ramble and for joining us throughout the year.
Indeed.
In fact. And this will not be the last you hear of us, because we have recorded an episode where we talk about Moana and some other stuff, a little bit of news, and that will come out sometime after Christmas. And then we will see you next year for more animation talk. And we hope you have a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year if you celebrate those things.
Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa.
Yeah.
Feliz Navidad.
We hope you have a great rest of December, basically. And ho, ho, ho.
Yeah. Look after yourselves.
Stay well and stay warm.
Bye, everybody.
Take care. Happy holidays.
Bye. Happy Christmas.
Righto, me dears. This is for Looming Well It. Sally-ho! All the little girls and boys, I've got this sack full of toys. I'm sure it gets blooming heavier every year. You've got to remember, this day in December is me busiest blooming night of the year. There's hours still to go, and my boots are full of snow, and both me poor old feet are blooming freezing. As we sail through the sky, going ever so high, we wish you the best of the blooming season. So jump up on my sleigh, and we're all on our way to another blooming Christmas.